Okay. Wait, let me drink some water before we start.
Gosh. Now I gotta drink some water. Let's everybody drink some water.
Yep, let's go.
All right.
Refreshed. Hydrated. Gotta pee.
Oh. The next problem.
And now I don't.
And cut.
And let's go.
And I'm done peeing. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody.
All right. Hello, and welcome to the 21st episode of Only Foreign Films. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Patrick, and we are joined by our very special guest, Alex Dapp.
Yes, hi. Alex Dapp, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
This guy's been bugging me for... No, I'm
just... Well, kinda. No. I really want to get on this podcast, but thank you all for
we wanted to have you.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you. It's so not hard to pick people, but to... like limit ourselves, I think, because there's so many amazing people that we want to have on here, and like so many amazing movies that we want to talk about.
So it's helpful when you're as passionate about being on it as we are about having you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I never really done this before. I won't lie, I'm a little nervous. I never really do these things, so
you've talked to both of us before.
I know.
I think you qualify.
I know, man.
You may all.
Hey, man, I'm recording. Like, who knows what I'm gonna say.
Oh, don't worry. Don't worry. I edit it. It's fine. We'll take all of the really offensive stuff out.
Oh, God, no.
No. Well, we're really happy. And luckily for you, we have an icebreaker segment.
Mm-hmm.
We like to talk about the movies that we have seen lately.
Sure.
So have you seen any movies lately that we want to talk about?
Well, yesterday, I saw I saw this movie called Bad Boys for Life.
Really? No way. I saw it too.
Oh, wow. Were we in the same theater?
Maybe. Where did you go to Cinemark?
Oh, I did.
Well, you wouldn't have been stupid enough to sit in the second row.
Oh, yeah. We would. We wouldn't, man. We wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Bad Boys for Life.
Is that a statement or the movie title?
That's such a segue. But I'm like, Bad Boys for Life. Like, come on, guys. What do you think?
No, but... man, y'all got me. Bad Boys for Life. I've never seen any Bad Boy movie.
Me neither.
In my life, ever. And I was like, I don't really care.
Oh, you went to the premiere of opening night without seeing any of the previous movies?
Man, that's so me for everything, man.
I knew we didn't have to, and I... Yeah, you don't have to.
No, you definitely didn't have to for this movie. And then you want to have a good time with it.
Surprisingly entertaining.
Yeah, surprisingly entertaining and, you know, fun. It's usually not my kind of movie. But
yeah.
However.
Usually I like a little more than just a big, dumb action movie. But it's surprisingly... It's funny both, like, they're intentionally being funny, and then it's also unintentionally funny at times. Mm. And I think they're embracing the fact that to some people, like, the stuff that's going on is just going to be funny, like, even as earnest as they're being. And so the fact that it's kind of a self-aware action movie is pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, you know, I give it a, I don't know, I don't have really a rating system, but I'll give it 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know,
okay.
Fair enough. It's my first 2020 release movie I've seen this year.
Hmm.
Yikes. I'm frantically looking at my Letterboxd. Oh, I don't know. Did John Mulaney and the Cyclones Bunch count?
I think that came out.
No, it came out like the one of the it's this first 2020. Damn. That sucks. I hate that kind of. But also, love it. You can't not. I'm okay with
that. It's better than other movies that are out right now.
I'm trying to think if I don't know if I've seen any that have come out in 2020.
Not a lot has come out. Unless you saw, Underwater?
Oh, I almost saw that, and I didn't.
The Grudge? Oh, yeah, The Grudge.
Oh, okay. No, I haven't seen that.
I wouldn't care.
So you got to go see Bad Boys for Life so that we can all have the first movie of... first movie of the decade. Oh,
my
God.
Oh,
man. It's Bad Boys for Life.
Wow.
No.
Okay.
Oh, that's
now
crazy.
I feel bad. I felt good when I was of the
five
year.
Star.
Yeah, five. Perfect. 10 out of 10.
It took it down another star.
It took it down another star. 5 out of 10.
Well, I mean, I guess it can only go up or it can only go down from here, I guess. Whatever way you look at it.
It's exciting. I think it's going to be an exciting year for movies. Because you have like Tenet coming out, Wes Anderson's newest film coming out, Dune.
Dune's gonna be
And David Fincher's newest movie.
That's right.
Ooh.
Mink. Yeah.
And that's gonna be really exciting.
By that. He's kind of been all over the place recently, so
like all TV, but this is the first movie and since Gone Girl. So.
Wow, that's crazy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, that's crazy.
That's right, because I guess with Mindhunter, and then he's doing that robots thing.
Oh, he did that?
Did he?
Yeah, I don't know if he directed how much. he was involved. Like he's a busy boy. He's all over the place. I saw one of the movies I saw came out last year, but was not the first movie I saw in theater. I saw 1917.
Oh, so yeah, I was going to talk about that too.
You gotta.
Oh my god, that.
Have you seen it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
it blew me away.
Yeah. Fantastic. I couldn't, like, I knew like a lot going into it what had gone into making it.
Yeah.
But the experience watching it was nothing that I was prepared for, and like my heart was racing at every second. Yeah. Like, it's insane what they did with that movie.
It's just genius of like a one take war movie. I mean, look how ballsy is that.
It's such an amazing idea, and it makes so much sense, especially like given the parameters of this particular story. It like it would not have been like that.
It's really well
experience
done too. Like, it's not just because Birdman was impressive, but it wasn't hiding the fact that they did multiple, like, it's just stitched together. And this one wasn't either. They're not claiming it. They're saying it's shot as if it was one take.
Mm-hmm.
There's one part in particular, I don't want to spoil anything, but it's about halfway through the movie, where it does cut to black, very obviously. But otherwise, they hide it pretty well. Just knowing,
knowing
enough about
how,
filmmaking, knowing our good friend Lincoln about how like long takes are well cut, I could see where the other ones were.
Yeah, same.
What I loved is that, so 1917 was my most anticipated movie of 2019. Really? Although I saw it in 2020, of course, but we'll forget that. I mean, I can't see it 2019.
Time. Yeah.
But it's like Roger Deakins doing a one take movie is like literally the thing that came to my mind.
Yeah.
I'm like, damn, he's such a master already. How can he do a one take? Because, you know, I love the guy. I love every movie he ever shot.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I'm really excited he got the Oscar nom.
Oh yeah, no, I'm
that's
so glad.
Yeah, so deserving. And like, even
who knows if he'll get it, because he's deserved all
I think he's winning, man.
He got Blade Runner was his first Oscar after it was his 13th nomination.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's nuts. What a career to be ignored by the
And family. Like, I had seen it a second time yesterday.
Have
or
you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I had talked about it so much to my friend, and then he wanted to go see it, and then I was like, duh, like, I'll go see it again. I'll like, I was, I again. Hyped myself up talking about it, because just, like, specific shots, like, and then I was watching a lot of behind the scenes after the fact, and they had made all of the sets, like, so practically, and they were, they don't really use any artificial light that I know of. Like, it's all natural lighting, mostly, and, like there's one scene where the only lighting is like flares that go over top.
That's my favorite scene.
My favorite scene.
I love that. And then when everything, when he's in the town and like everything's on fire and he's like running through and the beautiful, like the silhouettes.
Yeah.
And especially I liked, there's one shot in particular that made me gasp out loud, was when they went to the farmhouse and I can't remember their names, but the one guy is inside and the other one is outside, and it's beautifully silhouetted, and then it racks focus to him in the dark, and then you can see the perfect, like, I don't know, the focus and the camera work. I couldn't even, like,
it's definitely one of the best looking shot 100% on digital films I've seen.
Yeah.
And, I can't believe
have you all seen the behind the scenes look of it, like the featurette? I love that one.
This is a little shameless plug for us and for Towson, but we were both in Real World, and Shelley Strong, shout out to her, the first female
head of physical production.
This was one of her movies. Mm-hmm. She brought that some of those featurettes, like, really early on.
Yeah.
So we got to see them.
Casual.
And that got me so hyped to see it.
Yeah, that's why
even,
I want to see
even
it.
Even seeing all that stuff, like, I didn't think about that at all. I was just so sucked in the movie.
Yeah, that was what I think the biggest part of it was. Like, I wasn't... Yeah. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, like, it's already over? Like,
yeah.
Like I said, it got your heart racing the entire time, and like I was literally sitting on the edge of my seat, like, oh my gosh, like, especially like the final scene where, I guess it's not the final scene,
don't,
but like the final
it.
Push
yeah.
at the end,
I accidentally discovered the other day, it's very easy to spoil the movie, not even realize.
Oh yeah,
it.
True.
Oh really?
Where did y'all see the film? I saw it at the Senator big screen, so I got lucky.
Oh, yeah. I saw it at the Senator too, but I didn't see it on the big screen. But that would have been amazing.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
I saw it in Regal in Frederick, and they showed it on the largest screen they have. That's not the IMAX screen, so it was like the best way that we could see it there.
Mm.
Cool.
I was happy.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing film.
Anything else
you want to talk about? I have a couple of things. I mean, I started watching, because after we just did the movie What We Do in the Shadows, I started watching the TV show What We Do in the Shadows, which is super hilarious, and it's written by it's written by a couple different people, and every episode is like directed and written by other people, but it has the same original people connected to it. Mm-hmm. And one of the most recent episodes that I watched has all of them in it, which is awesome. That's and cool. As like their actual people, and Tilda Swinton is in it, which is awesome.
Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton. Tilda Swinton is a different person. But in it, her character name is Tilda too. Oh, which is like, I think that's lovely.
That's really awesome.
You can play anything.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And then I've been rewatching Broad City, which is my love from my beginning of college that I used to watch all the time, and it's still incredible.
Yeah, I watched a few episodes of Broad City, and I was laughing. But I think it was like, I think it ended, right? Like, there's no more Broad City.
Yeah, no.
Right?
Yeah.
That's just a poster. I mean, it's not, they don't really do posters for TV, but I watched a few episodes, and man, I was laughing.
It was so funny, man.
Great tagline.
Yeah. Put that one on the DVD color. That would be more appropriate.
And then one to talk about was Little Women I
saw Little Women as well. Yeah. Did I talk about it last time or had I? I don't know if I'd seen it.
I don't think we talked about it last time.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised. Women were a lot bigger than I thought.
Yeah, they weren't so little.
Shut up.
They weren't so little.
I literally said that every time that someone wants to talk about the movie with me. I'm like, I don't know. Patrick, women were pretty large.
Patrick, I'm the same boat, man. I make the same same.
I expected to like really struggle to be able to see them, but they were right there. They did close-ups with the women too. I was like,
pretty easy too.
Really, really showing your
and hand. Even on like the wide shots, you can like still kind of see them.
Still like larger than life. Like they're bigger than normal people, which is disappointing. No, that's the stupidest, easiest joke in the world.
I did.
No, I mean, I love the movie so much, and like I watched the trailer a couple months ago, and also because my friend saw an advanced screening of it and was like, "You're gonna love this movie," and so I've like had that in my brain before I watched it, and I was blown away honestly from like every like the costumes and the acting and the dialogue, and specifically like the way, I mean, we're gonna talk about this on a different episode, but recently rewatching Scorsese movies and then seeing the round table between like Scorsese and Greta and Lulu and
Noah
and all those other amazing people, like the way that the story is structured and going back and forth between different timelines and the way blending time together, and just, it was so effortless, and I don't know, I really appreciated that.
Did you both see any, I mean, obviously Little Woman's been adapted so many times, and you know,
I had not seen any book. Other ones.
Have you seen any?
No, I haven't. I've just read the book.
Same. I've only read like younger. A chapter
you read the
of
book.
The book.
First oh, really?
I haven't even finished the book. And apparently they like this one is like makes the characters, some of them, pretty different than the book. So I'm kind of actually excited to read it now.
I mean, it takes it, I would say, in a more modern sense. Like making, like, especially
That was kind of clear from the trailer that they were going to
do that. Well, like, I mean,
also expected it to be more modern.
That's
true. I don't mean like the style, but I mean like in some of the progressive themes.
Yeah.
I mean, it is very, but I was like surprised how, if you had told me that's how the book is, I would have believed it, even though like it is very modern.
It is very similar. Like, it's not like big stretches that were like
I hear
taken
the
out.
Structure, like the way the story is told is different. Is that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I was saying, like this one jumps a lot.
Which
way? Yeah.
Worked in some parts for me, and other parts it kind of stopped the movie for me.
Yeah, sometimes it like took me out of it for a second. I was like, wait, which timeline is this? What happened? Like, but then other times,
sometimes it wasn't even that. It was just like whatever emotional beat they left me with at one, like stopping it like killed that emotion for me.
And that's true.
I wanted it to be more like transitional, because sometimes they really nailed it. I think if it hadn't nailed it so well on parts of the movie, I wouldn't have noticed it when it didn't do it.
No, that's a great note. I agree with that.
Still loved it though.
That's true. Yeah, I took my grandmother to see it. Nice. She loves Little Women, and I took her to see it. Aww. And yeah, no, but she really liked it a lot. And yeah, but I know I enjoyed. the movie. Greta Gerwig, I think, directed the hell out of that movie, if I be all honest. I loved Lady...
definitely snubbed.
I loved... she was. And I loved Lady Bird as well. Lady Bird, I feel like, still better than Little Women, in my opinion, but, like...
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I guess, I don't know, directing-wise, like, moving the camera, being more, I don't know, energetic.
She's definitely got a lot of experience that comes through. But we were talking about this on the... shout-out to the last episode of this podcast that we just recorded. we talked a lot about how, for your debut, you have, like, your whole life to make your first film. And then after that, it's just a race until the second one. And Lady Bird, I think, is so good because it's so clearly a story she's carried with her and been, like, cultivating for so long.
I had heard that the original script was almost, like, 300-some pages. Yeah, I'm sure. And, like, now it's only about, like, 100, which is crazy.
I mean, it's just the pressure of, like, Little Woman, you know, has been adapted a million times. Yeah. And, like, it's also, like, one of the, you know, the classic novels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that
and she's also got so much hype around her as, like, a big, I mean, Lady Bird to be nominated for as much as it was and as big as it was, like, had to be a lot of pressure, but I think she definitely pulled it off.
She did.
Really good. I have, did you want to talk about anything else, or was that everything?
I guess the one movie, I saw Just Mercy.
Okay.
Here's as well.
What do you think of that?
Just Mercy. No, it's good. You know, it's kind of by the numbers and all that stuff, but it is emotionally powerful. Michael B. Jordan's one of my favorite actors. He really nails it.
I like Jamie Foxx a lot as well. And Jamie Foxx, I was kind of intrigued to see it for him. But I've talked before how I'm not a big fan of, like, message movies that are, like, really only about the message, and the story and the experience of seeing the movie kind of takes a back seat. And that trailer just kind of gave me vibes of that.
Yeah, I mean, like... I mean, it's a movie. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, actually, well, I count as my 2019 movies. Like, I rank in that as my 2019 movie. But, like, I mean, it's up in, like, my top 25, okay. But not
that's good,
in my, like, top 20. Like, between 25 and 20. You know, it's good. Solidly acted.
Yeah.
Very, actually, very well acted. It but, looks, you know, memorable. I mean,
based on the reviews, it looks like it does everything it sets out to do.
Yeah.
It's not the audience.
And it's also kind of like a, I don't say crowd pleaser. I mean, obviously, it's dark material they dealt with. But, like,
I see what you're
but,
saying.
But people, like, kind of who are more, more like the L, kind of like the L.
That awards type.
Yeah, movie. And they actually clapped at the end. And
really?
Yeah, yeah. So they all liked it a lot. Yeah.
That's cool.
Anything else that you saw? That out.
Yeah, and it's kind of ironic. The last movie I'll talk about is literally called The Last Movie.
The last movie.
Yeah, it's a movie that's been on my radar for a while, but it's kind of hard to find, and I managed to find it on Canopy.
Is that with Burt Reynolds?
No, it's Dennis Hopper. That's the last movie star.
Okay.
I do enjoy the last movie star. No, this is a weird, weird movie. This is Dennis Hopper around Easy Rider.
Yeah, this was a follow up from Easy Rider, right? Okay, no.
It's a movie about a sort of he's a stuntman, but he's more of like an animal wrangler. And he's part of a film crew that shoots a Western in Peru, and they take over like this town and they build this Western town in Peru. And then like somebody gets hurt or dies on it. And then the town, like, they finish the movie and leave. But he stays behind, and like the town starts, like, they've changed the town with this Western. And so all of these people who, like, don't know anything about technology and didn't really understand movies and like acting or movie violence start mimicking the movie. They start like recreating the movie, and they start building like cameras and lights out of like sticks and doing all this really weird shit. And it's easy when you read like a log line to say that, but you would not get that from watching the movie, because it is told totally non-linearly. It cuts around at random. It's mind-boggling, the structure. I liked it. It's far from a perfect movie. It is a very challenging watch at times to really like understand what you're seeing, like what scenes don't make sense until later were like explained who characters are way after the fact. Like, it cuts around. It's shot very frantically, like, kind of run and gun. But the performances are really good in that they don't feel like performances. And I want to know more. There's a documentary that's even harder to find called The American Dreamer, that's about the making of this movie, but also about, like, people like Hopper, who were, you know, really on this, like, almost like an American New Wave when movies like Easy Rider came out. And that counterculture movement.
I mean, it was like the early 70s, and I think they were like, like these like avant-garde like
it's independent so avant-garde yeah,
yeah. And independent like you know directors just like literally go out there like Martin Scorsese of course came from a Francis Ford Coppola. I mean it's like yeah but I mean obviously some of it like ages great yeah, and some of it just ages so bad which I'm guessing is what you're talking about.
And this movie does feel like a movie made on drugs too. Like people say as like a joke but like this one it's clear and like based on his reputation but it's a movie I can't really even say like give a recommendation to. I recommend people watching it and just drawing your own conclusion from it whether you like it or not. I can't really like say someone would like oh you'd really like this movie or this is really worth your time watching it. I think it is just because it's so different. Like you won't see a movie like this. But I'm still puzzled by this movie.
When did you say it came out?
1971. And it's on Canopy. That's how I found it. And it's other than that, I think it's pretty. I think there's a Blu-ray, but it's pretty hard to find. But I recommend.
No, that's super interesting.
But yeah, that's the last movie that I have to talk about this week.
Perfect.
Yeah. Do we? Oh wait! Before we jump right in, I mentioned this before we started the episode that I wanted to talk about this a little bit. You are a big awards buff,
right?
And this is the first episode with a guest that's come out since the Oscar nominations were announced. Do you have any thoughts or any little recap? I can pull up a list here to refresh my memory.
Well, so I've been following the Oscars since 2014. I just love I like predicting things a lot. I've always been like that guy. And also a big sports guy, of course. So I guess it feeds into that.
Kind of the sports of movies.
So I guess, yeah, of course. But like, yeah, but you know, I like predicting the Oscar and all that stuff. But let me tell you, awards, they're bullshit.
Yeah.
Like you don't need the Oscars or any award show telling you what you can or cannot like. I just like doing this just because, you know, I just like predicting things. I think it's fun seeing directors, actors that I admire get like some recognition and all that stuff. I think it's real cool. But you know, I follow it basically throughout the year kinda, and I think it's just fun.
Yeah. It's one of those things when a movie I like or even a movie that like there are some movies on like that didn't deserve. I didn't think Bohemian Rhapsody deserved any Oscars.
Oh hell no! Please get that movie.
But out. A lot of times, I think a lot this year, more than last year, at least for me, I was like, oh, I'm really happy that movie got nominated. But then the ones that got snubbed, I'm like, Oscars are stupid.
Yeah, you're never gonna be.
It's a constant dance.
You're never gonna be agreeing with it.
I think it was disappointing, especially like no female directors. Like there was some big oversights. Movies like Uncut Gems and stuff got totally ignored. But there are some movies, especially on the Best Picture list, that I'm really glad got nominated because I think people will watch them because of that.
You know, like, the Best Picture list, I have, like, really barely any qualms with it. I mean, of course, it's Uncut Gems, but, you know, Uncut Gems, not really
I didn't think that was gonna be an Oscar movie. No,
it was never going to be on their radar and throughout the season.
If it was, it would be Sandler, but at the same time, I see why maybe he didn't get an actor.
I was hoping for at least a screenplay, but it wasn't. Yeah. That didn't go in.
Or, like, editing or something. Like, the sound really.
I mean, everything in that movie is just great. But like unfortunately nothing will work. But yeah, otherwise the rest, you know, some is like I say so one of the biggest snubs on those Oscar nominations is Jennifer Lopez.
Really?
Not getting Best Supporting Actress. She got every nomination, she even got some wins, and I thought she would be a dark horse candidate to beat Laura Dern, who is definitely the front runner for the Oscars.
Do you think it's because of that lawsuit? Do you think that had anything
lawsuit
to it?
The story that was based on, or the person that the story that they made that was Jennifer Lopez's character, she's suing them because they didn't, they like talked to her about her story, but they didn't confirm that they got the rights to like make it.
And I don't see that really being that much of an influence. I mean, I never even heard of it. I mean, maybe it could have, and maybe. But I don't know.
It seems like there has been stuff in the past that like big movies have had some controversy come up, and then even if they've been nominated for other awards, the panel is way more like gun shy.
Well, then you see that Joker got the most nominations out of any movie, and that's, you know, that talk about controversial upon release.
Yeah,
I mean, who would have seen Joker being the most nominated movie out of any movie? That includes The Irishman.
Yeah,
Once Upon a Time.
Be Once Upon a Time by one, because it's got 11, and then Once Upon a Time is 10.
I mean, I would never. I mean, just
that surprises me.
I mean,
so
like
much.
Just because like the origins, like superhero.
Yeah. I mean, although Black Panther, I mean, completely different movie, but Black Panther got a lot of noms, and I think that really opened the door to be like, okay, I guess superhero movies can get.
I guess, yeah, sure.
And this is, I mean, it's obviously different. It's not a, like, big air quote superhero movie
and
in
I'm
the
guessing,
same sense.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And I'm also guessing I'm, like, partly minority vote here, but, like, look at the director's list as well, and some people don't like Todd Phillips' nomination. I personally don't mind it. Because Joker, look, I really, really liked the Joker a lot, and I thought Todd Phillips really directed that movie so well. But I did. But saying that, I thought Greta Gerwig should have gotten in.
And, I think compared to the people who aren't on that list, I don't think he should be up there.
Yeah,
nah. I don't think he did a bad job. I don't think he did the best job. That's my biggest.
Sure.
And I think that's the disparity that a lot of people have in that discussion. I don't think he. Like is a bad director or is undeserving. I just think I don't think he's the one of the five best directors.
Todd Phillips, the director of The Hangover, is with the company of Tarantino, Martin Scorsese,
Bong Joon-ho,
and
Sam Mendes.
I mean, how about that? Like he's like the bad boy.
Yeah.
But otherwise,
I would say Bong Joon-ho is the bad boy. His stuff is hilarious.
Oh my god. No.
Responses. I really
been the star of it.
Parasite has had a lot of talk about it. But that's the one I'm most excited. I don't know what it'll win. I mean, it'll get Best Foreign for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it'll get any others. I'm a little nervous. I think this might be another Roma situation.
It could be. I mean, it all depends on the season. There's a bunch of other major
But I'm so excited shows. It got nominated because people are definitely watching it now.
Oh, yeah.
And that makes me so happy because I think it's one of the best of the year.
Parasite's one of the best of the decade.
Absolutely needs to be watched.
Agreed.
Of course. But otherwise, I mean, nominations kind of went in line of how
pretty standard
go. Yeah, pretty standard.
We'll recap. It's Ford v Ferrari, which that's kind of a movie generated to get Oscars. I liked it.
I liked it a lot,
I don't
too.
Think it was the best of the year, but
it was very close to my top 10. I really liked that.
Yeah, it was close to mine, too. Irishman is great. Rabbit is great. Joker, we already talked about that. Little Women. Marriage Story. I watched Marriage Story today, and I'll talk about it on my...
How do you feel?
I kind of want to talk. I was going to save it for the next episode because we're recording it so soon. But I watched it today, which is weird. I watched Paris, Texas, and then Marriage Story today. So not the happiest day, I will say.
Definitely not.
But I think my Letterboxd review was something like, really well done, but am I supposed to like this? It's really like well written, like well acted. I just don't enjoy the experience of watching it, and I'm kind of
do you think that that's what they were set out to do, or do you think that it made you feel that way in like a miscommunication way?
I don't want to say it's both, because I think it's definitely intentional. Like it's a very intentional movie, but I'm curious what they want me to walk away with. Like you can show me all the stuff and like it's very brutal and raw, but I just don't feel like it has a purpose to seeing it, because I leave the movie not feeling any different. It's not like at the end it changes and I'm like, oh, like that was like a good experience to watch or something like that. But it's fine. I don't know if it's best picture. I would probably do screenplay and acting, but
yeah, I mean Marriage Story, I don't know, I really liked, I thought Marriage Story was great, and I don't know, I thought like it kind of deserved best picture. I just thought it was great, but yeah, I can see what you're saying though, because it is just a brutal.
I mean, the other three I haven't mentioned are 1917, Once Upon a Time, and Parasite, which
those
obviously belong on the list.
Mm-hmm. All givens.
Obviously, I'm rooting for. I've been very vocal how much I loved Once Upon a Time,
mm-hmm.
So I'll be rooting for that. But it's an interesting year. Every year I'm like, I'm curious what next year is going to be, and then
who knows?
It's always kind of weird because I feel like every year is just a continued reaction from the previous year.
Yeah,
so it's kind of a mess,
which is true.
Yeah, that's true.
That's why people kind of get turned off by the Oscars. I can see definitely why.
Yeah,
they images.
It's disappointing because they used to mean so much, and now
people are just losing it.
Yeah,
and that is true. It's still my Super Bowl of like.
No,
a
I
film,
watch them every year,
but like,
yeah,
still.
It's like you can't not watch them, but you can't fully support them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you see, like what we've been talking about. You see what's been snubbed and, like, how, like, the biases are and you know what's behind it. And
It's like I like leaving the politics of filmmaking at you know, at home sometimes. Mm-hmm. And this is just as much of a celebration of film. It's just a celebration of how, like, the system of filmmaking in Hollywood, yeah, especially. Yeah. And it's just kind of some of it, you don't like to be reminded of how ugly it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like it's also weird because I feel like everybody watches the Oscars, like, no matter if you're in the film industry or, like, you know about it or not, you watch it, but, like, yeah, like, at least people talk about it and, like, you're aware of, like, what movies are on the list. Mm. And I feel like that also plays into it, like, the commercialized kind of playing to
it's an advertising
yeah, basically,
because they know the average person, whether you love movies and know anything about the movies or not, will at the end of the day be like, oh, well, I got one Oscar,
yeah,
so I guess I'll pay money, mm-hmm, to watch it or recommend it to a friend or, mm-hmm, you know, it at the end of the day, it just makes the studios more money than they spend to win the awards.
Of course, yeah. which is such a lame, yeah, thing. I wish people could just, like, see the movie, see what they think, but obviously that's not the case anywhere, yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, if only there's a way to do. And they talked about doing, like, a most popular, which I think that's stupid when they talked about the most popular Oscars.
No, I hate it. You know how much.
It'd be interesting if there was, maybe not the Oscars are not right for it, but, like, an awards show that had some sort of, like, voting of, like, the public in a way.
Yeah.
Like,
but that would be,
I feel like,
yeah,
that might
go wrong
as soon as, yeah, I said it. I'm like, that's dangerous. There's no way that works, because in my world I'd be like, oh, like, I'd put a lot of thought in the vote, but that's not happening.
Yeah, yeah, nobody cares
just
that much.
just let it be, yeah, let it play out, you know.
It'll be good years,
you'll never agree, yeah, people will never agree about anything. You know, it's just how it is.
Yeah.
But, and with that, I don't know, I feel like, like, I mean, we've talked about this on here before, like, our realm, our world of film is so different than, yeah, like, what the popular culture would,
exactly,
be. And I feel like it would be in total, like, it would be so many of us voting and, like, thinking through our voting.
But so many
and
more
then,
who are just like,
like,
I love
whatever.
4v4!
It needs to win!
4v4!
I'm 60 years old and I watch NASCAR all day, and this is my movie! No, this is, I liked, again, liked Ford v Ferrari.
Shout out to my brother.
Shout out. Shout out to my favorite movie. Yeah. No, that was good. I'm glad we got a good perspective of someone else.
Yeah, mm-hmm, sure. But otherwise, you know, Oscar nominees. I'm still going to watch it. Can't wait. Can't wait. Yeah. Oscars, watch it.
Like, you need a recommendation. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, let's talk about a movie. It didn't win an Oscar, but it did win the 1984 Palme d'Or, mm-hmm, which, oh, man, they know how to pick them. Parasite.
Oh, of course.
Pulp Fiction, Paris, Texas.
Mm.
All P movies that won the Palme d'Or.
That's why you have to pick out P movies, huh?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's going to be the episode title, P movies.
P movies by P. McAllister.
Oh, my God.
Winning the P. d'Or. I hate this. Oh, kill me. No, Paris, Texas. This is another pick where I was like, of course. Like, we have so many guests who, when they tell us what movie they want to do, I was like, yeah. Because you, yeah, I feel like you talk about this movie and you're, like, a big champion, which I'm so, like, makes me so happy after seeing it that you're such a champion of this movie and you've gotten so many people to watch it.
I'm so surprised that you hadn't seen this before.
Yeah, this is, I think, the first movie that both the guest and you had seen, and I had not seen it.
That's crazy.
Wow, Patrick. Yeah, I see all the movies, man. What are you doing? You see the last movie. But
I know. I was busy seeing Bad Boys for Life.
Oh, we're Bad Boys for Life.
I don't know. It just missed my radars. It's also, like, I watched it on Canopy today. Mm. I'm not a big renter. I used to be big into, like, Redbox, but that's all, like, new movies.
Mm-hmm.
So if it wasn't, like, at the library, I didn't see it for a long time, and this was not at my library, or it was not on my radar when I was getting movies from the library or something. I don't know. But of all of the weird, obscure classics, I totally missed it.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know how I first watched this movie. Look, I saw a freshman year in Towson, you know, Canopy for free on, you know, you go to a Towson Shopping website, you get Canopy.
Yeah.
Now it's not there anymore. Great. Thank you, Towson.
Use your library card, though.
No, yeah. No, that's why I do.
Maybe
but
you
got, like,
a snub Towson.
Yeah,
throw him on the bus here.
You've educated me, but you've also harmed me in so many ways.
It's not a Towson authorized podcast. but anyway, I don't know. I saw freshman year. I was just looking through movies I want to see. I heard Paris, Texas. I think I saw some like list of like movies you need to watch or something like that.
I've always seen it on the AFI list.
That's I always see that the one still of her sitting there in like the pink.
That shows up on like every frame.
Every single one.
Like every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was just like
one perfect shot, that's the Twitter. Every frame of painting is like a YouTube.
Yeah,
one perfect shot or one of the Twitter.
I've seen it so many times. On so many articles and top 10 lists and and videos. Yep.
But man, watching a movie for first time was just like lightning. And I was just lying in my bed, you know, with hopefully he's not listening to this, but like my annoying roommate, my old annoying dorm roommate just playing his video games, Call of Duty, and I'm just like looking through. I'm like, what movie do I need to see?
What's better than Call of Duty?
Fair Sex.
And I just like, so I saw Fair Sex, like, I'll just watch it. And usually when I watch movies, like I want to watch it in the dark, kind of want to watch it on a big screen, like TV or whatever, just to get that great experience. Yeah. But, you know, I just saw this full light laptop, whatever. So I didn't expect anything much, but then I watched it and I'm like, I was in it. I was like, just literally falling. You know, it's following the characters and like the story and like the emotion, like the rawness of it. It was just, it was just unbelievable.
Something that was that I had noticed, like halfway through it, I think, was how like the pacing of it. I had noticed, like I made a point to pause it, and it was exactly at 2 minutes or 2 minutes, 2 hour. Sorry, 1 hour in to the 2 hour movie that it was. That was when, I guess you would call the inciting action with, like, a timeline where she was like, oh, it's this, it, she goes on every fifth day of the month, and it's the first. Yeah, yeah. And that was the inciting, I would feel like that's the inciting incident. Yeah. And that was an hour into the movie.
I know, yeah.
And
I feel like the inciting incident is the, like, that they found his brother. But it is, like, a different movie, the first half of the second half.
It really is.
Yeah.
I forget, like, how, like, long that takes from, like, your inciting incident to, like, you know, him going to Houston. I mean, and, like, doing his whole thing there. Is there any spoilers? Like, do I need to spoil this movie, or do I try to keep out these spoilers?
I think we've talked about it enough. If you haven't seen Paris, Texas, see it, because we'll spoil it. You can go ahead.
So spoiler warning, I guess. But, you know, when he has to go to, like, Houston and do his whole thing. But, yeah, I forget how long it takes.
Yeah.
And that's just the beauty of it.
And really. I was thinking about, like, as I had made that realization that, like, the first part of it didn't feel like I was waiting to get to, like, the incident or whatever. Like, there, it was so interesting up to that point, and, like, so many little, like, parts that you were getting and people that you're meeting and, like, little information that you were getting to lead you to this point. Like, you couldn't get to this point without having the rest of the movie. But it didn't, like, the structure of it felt so, like, thoughtful and but also unique that I haven't felt like in a different movie before.
Yeah, you know, that's no doubt true.
It's such a like a yin and yang almost, because you spend the first half of the movie, it's like he's got to Harry Dean Stanton's character Travis has to like find himself before he can find his wife, his estranged. Well, they're not divorced.
They're just estranged.
So it is, it's very, I don't know, it's just such a beautiful, poetic movie.
It is. She even, like, as you said that, I had written down a quote that I think she had said where she was like, I didn't want to use him to fill my emptiness. Like, finding, like, you need to fill yourself up before you can give yourself to other people. And
that whole scene.
That kills
peep show.
Scene. That's like the last 30.
Or the last 30 minutes.
Yeah, sure.
I could not believe how long that was going on. That was. Yeah. I was so impressed at how, like, that's such a bold choice, really.
Yeah, I mean, just these two characters talking. I mean, they both give their like big speeches each time, but like you get their viewpoints.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
they're just pouring themselves out.
I guess can I just like say the premise real quick?
Yeah.
It's not, I guess not a lot of people don't really know Paris, Texas, so might as well just
now
say
that
it.
We've. I almost wish we could edit it back in before we
spoil
it. But if you've made it this far, I mean,
the
movie's old, and that wasn't really... spoilers don't really kill this movie.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, like, it's nice to not know anything going in, but...
I'll just give a quick thing.
Yeah.
So you see this guy, it's a guy named Travis, who basically... the whole movie starts out him walking in a desert. and he's alone. He has a gallon of water with him, just wearing a red cap. He's obviously very worn down.
Universal costume of America, as they say, with the baseball cap and jeans and a t-shirt.
Yeah, true. and actually, Gamora pointed about, like, this is about the American dream as well, and, like, what does it be?
Yeah.
In America as well, but I guess we'll get into that later. But, like, but anyway, it starts out with him in the desert. He's been gone for 4 years until, like, he just shows up in the desert, and basically his brother, Walt.
Stockwell was so good.
Oh my gosh. I love Dean Stockwell in that. And he, like, basically, Walt and... He's that way. So, like, Walt, he's in L.A., and he hears about it. And the thing is, like, Walt has been taking care of Travis's son for the last 4 years, ever since Travis's disappearance. Mm-hmm. Because who knows what happened.
He and his wife disappeared, which is something you find out. Not later, but... In the grand scheme of things, like, it's still pretty early in the movie.
You find out pieces and little things help you get there.
Yeah. So basically, it's like the whole journey. The brother gets, finds Travis, and Travis, he doesn't speak for first half hour.
Right. It's like 36 minutes or something into the movie before he says a single word.
Yep. He doesn't speak one thing. He's basically. A doctor who took care of him because he had a little fainting spell in the beginning, like, saying, like, I don't take care of mutes.
Yeah.
Like, a very cynical German doctor, man.
German doctors. Did you play Fallout New Vegas?
Nah.
Oh, okay. Well, for any...
Cynical German doctors?
No, but the opening of the game feels a lot like the opening of this movie with, like, the amnesia, and you wake up in a doctor's office.
Sure. Fallout New Vegas?
Yeah.
Fair sex is exact.
Exact same
Stole
movie.
It.
Yep.
Oh, no, but anyway, yeah. What was I saying?
Then he starts opening up. He starts talking to his brother.
Yeah. Then it starts opening up, and it's pretty interesting because it's very childlike in the beginning when he starts talking. It's like how a 10-year-old child would talk to, like, their father or whatever, or whatever caretaker. You know, it's very, like, simplistic and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, you get to basically opens up more and more. Because he also had memory loss as well. Mm-hmm. He definitely had some sort of memory loss.
Amnesia or something.
Yeah, some sort of amnesia that something very traumatic has happened, obviously. And basically he goes on to make his, like, own decisions, his very drastic decisions by the end.
Reconnecting with his son, and then from that reconnecting both himself and his son with his estranged wife. Really his son more than him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and his strange wife, played. I can't pronounce her name.
Nastasia Kinski.
Yeah, that name.
Natasha.
Yeah, it's a lot. There's too many S's in that name.
Mm. Way too many S's. but she's also a pretty great actor herself. And,
really fantastic.
Yeah, and she not a lot of screen time. She obviously just shows up at the very end.
Yeah,
she just gives a great performance. But yeah. No, Paris, Texas can't.
It's funny watching Marriage Story the same day because that end, last 30, 40 minutes is what a lot of, like, Marriage Story is in, like, these big chunk conversations where it's just the two characters, like, almost just... It's such an interesting back and forth. And again, with the setting is so interesting with the one-way mirror. But the way that they sort of, like, open up to each other, almost like it's like a tennis match is how I feel, like, the way it kind of goes back and forth as they're both sharing their lives since they, you know, disappeared from each other's lives in a sense. But then how, the voids left by each other, how they start to fill in, like, as they reconnect. It's just unbelievably well written and acted as well.
I was doing a little bit of research into just, like, the background of the movie, and it was written by Sam Shepard, who's a playwright, which
and a good actor
made so much sense. Yeah. And it had reminded me of Waiting for Godot, if I don't know if either of you are familiar with that.
I heard of it. I've never seen it.
Like, the way that they use silence in that, and this movie, I think, is beautiful. I mean, obviously, it looks amazing, so the silence is, like, you're not losing anything if it's just silent, but the weight of it is, like, so much, like, it's incredible, like, how much just waiting and like watching the characters, like the actors' reaction to each other, and like especially when they're watching the film with all of them, like I don't think they really even talk at all.
One of the best parts is that home movie section where Travis, well, I mean basically, well, Travis and the rest of the wall and his family watch the home movie of them from like, you know, years ago.
Yeah, it was last time they're like all together.
Yeah, all together with Travis and his wife and
his son. Hunter. It's like two or three or something.
Yeah, and like they're all just hanging on the beach. But then, yeah, so you have like the Super 8 movies, and then you have the reactions like Hunter looks at Travis, and Travis like, you see like the pain of the memories are there.
Yeah.
He does like reactions where he's like putting his head against his hand, I mean his, your hands against his head and all that stuff. And also the music.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I'm going to talk about with music. The music is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like the guitar-centric.
Oh my gosh.
Like score created by Rye Cooter, I think. That's his name.
Okay.
I think that's his name.
It's really.
But like the slide guitar.
So unique, also, yeah.
Yeah, very unique and is exactly says what the environment is to the movie, which is like lonely because you have that one wailing guitar the whole time. It's like lonely, desolate.
It's fitting with like the settings too. They both take place technically in deserts.
Yeah.
Even though a lot of it's in LA once they go back home. It's kind of I would describe it almost as like a domestic Western in a weird way. Like it's very modern, but also not in like a, modern Western is kind of its own genre. I know you're a fan of No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
It kind of has a lot of feelings of that, minus like the story is obviously very different.
Yeah.
Have you seen Hell or High Water?
Yeah, no, I've seen
that Hell or High Water. That one feels a lot more similar to this.
Yeah, no, I can see it.
Something like that, sort of almost like an old subgenre of Western and drama in a sense.
Right. Yeah. You know, but I totally get you. And I love movies. My favorite type of movies, with like story wise, is family, like or like the reconnection of the past and the relationship between a father, son, mother, whatever, parent to child, or brother, whatever, some family connection. I just love those type of movies, and Paris, Texas was a big, like one of the big stories. Also, the other art form that. dealt with this the video game The Last of Us. That was literally the other great thing as well, but I was like, that's a completely different story. But like otherwise, but that's like, those are like my favorite type of stories, and that just really drives me home.
I'm also really moved by especially the parental stuff like that.
I agree. I think like speaking to your point, especially about like the relationships between everybody, the acting I think is something that is super strong, and something that I noticed specifically is Hunter. I don't know who the actor is, but I was like, I was noticing him a lot more.
The kid was great, and he's the son of the co-screenwriter. It's not Sam Shepard's son, but it was another writer.
How his real name is Hunter. It's Hunter Carson, and he's playing
Hunter Carson.
Like
Hunter
it seemed Henderson. Like he was just playing himself, like the way that he was interacting with the adults is exactly how like children talk to adults.
Yeah, no, it was very, you know, I really like that child's performance.
He also stars in Invaders from Mars, which is a Tobe Hooper like sci-fi, kind of almost like a horror movie for kids that I really love. Like it's kind of a cult.
He's in that
movie. Yeah, he's like the star of
it. Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know he had a career after Paris, Texas. I mean, I'll do respect to
Invaders from Mars. Unfortunately, made like no money whatsoever. It was kind of aping off of the success of like E.T. or something like that.
Nice,
but still a movie I really enjoy. But of course, that's him. I didn't bother looking at his IMDb.
Huh. Interesting, didn't it? But no, the kid was good. But of course, you gotta bring in the best, one of my favorite actors.
Yeah,
Harry Dean Stanton. Like, well, talk about an actor who is in so many movies, many movies, more in obviously mostly in supporting roles.
As, he's a great character actor.
I mean, people don't know him. He was in Pretty in Pink or 16 Candles.
Okay,
I know one of those movies with that actress, that
Molly Ringwald.
Yeah,
Molly Ringwald.
His filmography is so so long that I mean,
he was in The Godfather. He worked with Scorsese in The Last Temptation, I think.
Yeah. Twin Peaks. He's in
David Lynch.
He's in Fire Walk with Me, but it was really the revival, which unfortunately was one of the last things that he did. Twin Peaks Showtime series.
He acted into his 90s.
Oh my gosh! And yeah, he's in so much. I think he's not in every part, but he's easily in over half of that, and he's unbelievably good in that.
Yeah, mm. Yeah, and also I think his last movie he ever did was Lucky. Lucky,
and then there's something called Frank and Ava.
I don't know that on here, but like Lucky is like the true, I think, send off of Harry Dean Stanton because he was the lead. He was the lead, and then after that movie was released, he like died. But like that was like his true send off.
Okay, yeah.
And I never seen it. I want to see it so bad. But otherwise, Harry Dean Stanton. He's such a treasure.
One of those actors that does not feel like he's acting at all in any of the parts.
And I watched a video. I watched a video from Fandor, which really talked about Harry Dean Stanton, how his face is like a rugged terrain, basically. It's like he tells so many things just from his expressions. Really, he doesn't need to say anything. Oh, yeah, he was an alien.
He did.
Right, he was an alien. I just came to my head. He was an alien. Anyway, he can tell so much, like, just through his face.
He doesn't say anything for a lot of the movie, which is so impressive.
Exactly, to the point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I have to give so much props to him.
I mean,
best role.
It could have been a way worse script and still worked just because of him. But the fact
he wasn't in so many bad movies, I bet.
Yeah, with his vast as his career was, they couldn't all have been good. Especially when you're doing character acting stuff, like you could easily. He's probably the best part of so many movies.
I think I heard like a behind the scenes thing is that I don't know who went up to him. I don't know who was his agent, Wim Wenders, who directed Paris, Texas, or Sam Shepard, but like he was getting tired of character roles. He was like, I want to get a lead, basically. Mm. And he was like, yeah, well, here's Paris, Texas. And yeah, I guess
it's almost kind of sad that it wasn't. I don't really know. I don't feel like it was as big as it could have been.
I mean, of course it wasn't big.
I feel like it could have been. It was, even though it won the Palme d'Or and stuff like that.
Nah, I mean, it wasn't a big movie when it came out.
Mm-hmm. It's a real shame.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Of course.
I feel like, especially the time that it came out in the 80s, like, it's so much about, like, the American dream in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. and the lost American dream, and about regrets, too,
mm-hmm.
and dealing with, like, decisions. It really, we were talking recently about La La Land, and it reminded me, especially the home movie scene, reminded me of that scene at the end where they're seeing the fake home movies of their life, through like just like their fantasies of what their lives could have been.
Mm-hmm.
And that scene feels like that in a different way, even though like those movies exist, because it's kind of like they're watching the life that they could be having right now if they hadn't sort of separated from themselves.
Yeah, sure. And you can attribute that to like the whole movie scene in Paris, Texas, like, man, what could have been? Everything just went so, didn't go so insane as he tells it.
Sure, it was an inspiration or an influence.
And like what you were saying, as I was thinking about this the entire time, like chasing, like there, I mean, I felt like the theme generally was about like emptiness and like trying to like find out what needs to fill that emptiness.
Yeah.
But then it also like watching them watch the home videos, I feel like in a relationship specifically, like that first like honeymoon phase, you always tend to try to chase that after, and then you don't realize that it's gone until you're in the depths of like arguing with someone.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like that was so beautifully presented in this movie.
Again, I hate that I watched Marriage Story the same
day. Yeah, that's crazy double feature.
Perfect of a double feature in the way that I hate myself.
Yeah, see Bad Boys for Life again.
Yeah, I can pick myself back up.
See that again. No, but that is true. I mean, like what I said, like that the big quintessential scene at the end where he was like going to the grocery store was like an adventure. That was like one of the quotes I kept in my head. And then all of a sudden you're saying about the honeymoon phase. It's like, then all of a sudden, I guess they had Hunter, I guess, and like he was poor and he was out of a job, and then he started drinking, and he really became know, it's a total asshole.
It's like, yeah.
It's like, and, you know, it's kind of shocking because you think like he would never do something like that. Yeah. But like he actually did.
I think.
And he was like the main cause of it.
Yeah. Like the saddest. The point that really drove that home was in that conversation at the end where he had been talking about how, like you were saying, like every second was an adventure. Going to the grocery store was an adventure. Like, I didn't even want to go to work because I wanted to be home. Mm-hmm. And then he says all these things. And like, even though like they had Hunter and then she was like more angry, or like she, like he was seeing things in her and then he was changing also. Mm-hmm. And then he says the one line where he's like, and this is the one time that I didn't want to be anywhere near you. Like, mm-hmm. that's when it changed. Like, and that's such a horrible moment in a relationship. And it's brutal. And, like, it, like, in a way, or it does make sense the way that it ends and why he chooses to do that.
He has to right his wrongs. Basically, it's like, you know, it's like the mother, like, the mother has, I guess, has to take care of like Hunter and all that stuff. So he like does that move of like literally basically leaving Houston, making sure Hunter is reunited with his mother. And it's, I mean, it's such a risky decision because you never see that. Like, he just like basically, after like spending so much time like trying to go back into society, he basically just leaves society again because he's not going back to Walt.
No.
he ain't going back to his brother. He's not doing that.
Yeah. It's so sad
that's awkward.
You're kind of waiting, and the film is kind of setting you up, not setting you up even, because you're not really sure what the reaction once they meet again is going to be. But in the back of your mind, like, your hope is that you get the home movies again, in a sense. Like, you get them all united, and they're a happy family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so much of this is, like, the best laid plans. Like, even the titular Paris, Texas is so sad when he's talking about the land that he bought in the mail for them to build a house and live
together. Right, that is true.
And, I mean, like, when he's talking to Walt about it, where he's like, no, I needed this because, like, this is where I must have began. Yeah. Like, I have to go back. And, like, he's so lost at this point that
finding where you came from is the only
way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the only thing that he can see to help what he's feeling right now. Just, like, the helplessness, really.
And, the last few shots, the cinematography, of course, of Paris, Texas, Robbie Mueller.
Mm.
It's just unbelievable. And, like, the last few shots in the ending... My favorite shot throughout that movie was the second to last shot.
Is that the one of him in the truck?
Yeah, in the truck with like the red kind of glaring out.
Oh my gosh, and,
like,
the colors.
Behind, and like basically the camera, basically behind it, but you can see a tear going down him. And like he's obviously just like reminiscing, but then he kind of gives a little smile at the end.
That's one of my favorites too. I could not believe the shot in the mirror room. When she turns out the lights and then goes over and kneels in front of the glass.
I had drawn that because I wanted to talk about it.
In her head. Oh my god.
Yes. It's beautiful.
Totally thought that too, basically.
Like that's such, like that set and that concept is such an amazing idea. And then to put the cinematography in that as well. And like
to get them to nail that with as tough as the scene is already and what they have to do is amazing too.
And I even another shot that I loved when after here, it was kind of like towards the end of his story where she starts to go into her monologue and she sits down and faces away from him and is talking like with the thing. And they're like not perfectly lined up, but he's like looking down at her and all of like, cause she used to be up there, like even just the small symbolism and then the colors, with the red and the green and like.
Here's like the symbolism with the colors. But I was focusing a lot more on that. I watched a little video essay. It makes a lot of sense. There's the theme that, so throughout the beginning of the movie, you have greens. You have the biggest symbolism of green.
Okay.
And other desolate colors, but mostly green, which means like his separation to society. Basically, you don't see that anywhere. But then when you see Walt. And Walt, if you ever notice, like if you watch it, he's in red mostly walls in red, white, and blue. Mm-hmm. Red, white, and blue. American.
Yep.
As an American. So basically, he's like an American society. He's the American
dream, too.
He's basically the American dream. Like, he's working as, like, billboard worker, I guess. But, you know, he's making a living and all
he's
that stuff.
He's got the family. He's got the house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you'll be seeing a lot of blue, reds, and whites. There's, like, literally a scene outside, like, the house where, like, Walt's sitting down. And then, literally, the Hunter and... and Walt's wife, there he comes out, and they're all wearing red, white, and blue.
Wow.
And there's so many shots. Yeah. Like, even, like, the buildings are subtly red, white, and blue.
And, yeah, and, but then when he came out of L.A., like, into Houston, you don't, I mean, you actually do see some red, mostly red, but like, you see some red, white, and blue with Travis's wife. Actually, what's his wife's name?
It's Jane.
Jane, yeah. His so like you see with Jane.
Excuse me.
And
yeah, especially in the like the hotel, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
In one of those like talking booth weird things.
Oh, you know, the talking booths before the final scene.
There's the one where she's wearing the pink.
It's all red and white.
At the end, well, like he's wearing red at the end, and then Hunter's wearing orange, and then she's in the pink, and then at the end where she's in the hotel, they're wearing green.
Oh no, yeah, you're right. They're wearing green.
But the final scene where they're in the room, she's wearing black.
Instead of pink. Same thing as him. Mm-hmm. He's wearing a black shirt and basically neutral colors, like that's the end of things.
And then in the end, I mean they're wearing green, and then the entire parking lot is entirely green. Yeah.
Yeah. That once again, that's what
and
they
then
said.
Sorry to cut you off.
That's fine.
Walking through the first time to meet her, the entire thing is red. Like all of the lights as you're walking in there.
Like no, he's like walking into red. And he's walking into the peep show, and like it's literally, you know, floods of blue
with the curtains and stuff.
Yeah. And then. Then he goes into like at the room, and yeah, he's bathed in red basically. Mm-hmm. And
I think they know what
color
they're
theory
doing.
Is great. I guess they know what they're doing.
Yeah,
yeah, I think they have a little bit of a pre-pro, probably.
Yeah,
I get an idea.
I mean, yeah, a little bit. Like, I'd like to see, like, I don't know,
maybe like a storyboard. Like, where's their art director? Like, I'd like to talk to their art director. Like, they need to,
yeah. I was trying to make a joke based on what's the, like, the sort of yellow and blue, like, all the stuff that, like, the modern movies do from,
like, the posters?
Oh, no. Like, the orange and blue?
Yeah, orange
and blue. Like, the orange and blue. Yeah, where's the orange?
Yeah.
What is that?
Orange and blue?
Wim Wenders.
A movie's not cinematic.
Robert Mueller from Wherever You Are.
It's been post-converted. What's the Coen Brothers movie? Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? It doesn't look like Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou. Is it really cinematic?
Asking the real questions.
What?
Do they really know like what color theory is? If
it's what is color? What is color theory, man? I don't want to put fucking like red everywhere, man. I'd be like, fuck it, here it is.
Hit the whole movie red. Are they all angry? What's going on?
I don't know, man. I just made it all red. What's up, man?
I really like, though, and this kind of plays into the color theory, that they're the stuff about there not being an in-between. You're either a rich father or a poor one.
I love that scene. That's so funny.
Yeah, and then he puts on the hat, and he's standing across the street, and he keeps fussing with the hat, and it looks goofier.
I know, I mean, like, he literally cuts into, like, a full suit.
Yeah.
Like, a hat.
He looks like a mobster.
That was such a cute scene where him
mimicking
and his son,
each other.
The first time, like, they basically both truly interacted.
Mm-hmm.
Was they were both walking on the opposite side of the street. Basically, he's, Hunter is mimicking Travis's, like, walks every time. Mm-hmm. And,
That in contrast to the when they were walking home before, like the scene in between is when they are watching the films, and then they're watching it, and Hunter's watching Travis like respond to all the images that are coming up, and then finally it's like him and Hunter, and then he's like, oh, and then he starts to smile, and then the last one of the last shots is like him immediately close to Travis. He doesn't say anything, and he just walks away, and then the next time when they're at school, it's such a, like, I don't know, I guess I said it earlier, the actor of Hunter is just amazing. Also like Hunter. The oh yeah, saying
Hunter Hunter.
Hunter Hunter. But the I don't know, like the dynamic of
their
his character
is so believable.
Too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All the stuff that made me tear up was something that like Hunter did.
So you did cry during this movie.
Yeah, oh yeah.
What parts of that movie did make you cry? Because I had some parts. Let's all get
it. When he gives, they're in the motel and he gives them the photos and Hunter, and he puts the photos under his pillow bed, and he says, you looked happy then. That one. Oh my God.
That's a little moment. But like, no, I see that. I can see that. The emotional moments was definitely the home movies.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, the ending. Just the whole ending.
Yeah.
all 30 minutes.
All 30 minutes. For sure. There's one, I think the first time my eyes got a little misty was, Hunter's in his bedroom and Anne, his aunt. But his quote-unquote mom, the woman who's been raising him for as long as he can remember, is talking to him. And she is kind of seeing the separation of him from their, you know, the family they've created with him. Mm-hmm. And that's when she's starting to get kind of, like, clingy to him. But this is right after the movie. They watch the movie, and he says, she's asking him some questions about what he remembers about his actual mother. Mm-hmm. And he says, like, that's not her. That's only her in a movie. And then he pauses, and then he does the a long time ago in a galaxy far away, makes the little Star Wars reference, and it gets just like there's just a twinge of humor in there that keeps you from being like, oh my
God. A little bittersweet moment.
Bittersweet is a good description of that.
I loved we're gonna talk about Hunter again, the scenes where he can hear the arguments that are happening like with his parents, and I don't know, like, my experience, like, when I was younger, like, hearing my parents argue like that, like, I don't know, it's such a weird experience, because you think of your parents in a certain light, and then to hear them, especially what they were arguing about.
Yeah.
And
really?
that's pretty traumatizing for being hungry, right?
Exactly.
Oh,
and,
man,
but I feel like
he's going to find himself walking through the door.
His emotional intelligence, I think, was so refreshing to give. I guess this speaks not only to Hunter as an actor and to the director, but also to Sam Shepard as a writer, to write a child like that with such emotional intelligence that like children are emotional characters and emotional people that deserve to be like listened to and talked to, and
he's
like
not
you
just
don't
an object to drive
exactly.
And Hunter even like leads like during the whole remember like one of my favorite and funniest, I mean it was kind of a funny part as well, I guess, is like when Travis ordered Hunter to like call his parents,
yes, the phone
and
yeah,
to like and to like say like, yeah, we're out in Bernardino, like in this phone booth, we're going to Houston, and the parents are like what, yeah, come on right now, and Hunter's like, I don't know what to do, and
like,
then Travis no, like, make a little
like, all right, I gotta go now.
That was also bittersweet to me to like
that's probably the last time they talk on them in the movie.
No, that was last time you see him.
Well, like the way that Travis, and he makes him do it, and like he knows
he
can't talk to them.
Do it.
Yeah,
it's
and
be you.
Yeah, and it's so sad. Like he knows that he can't talk to them, and
can't face him again.
It's so sad.
Who knows what happened like after the movie? I mean, I kept on thinking like, what happened after? I mean, it leaves you open ended, obviously. Because there's so many repercussions that will happen.
It's a happy ending in a way because of the reuniting, but it's kind of sad in the same way because their lives will still never be ideal.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I just want to lead to this because I thought this during this viewing. It's like looking at the other side of the coin, of like Walt and his wife.
Anne, her name, sir.
So like, yeah, Walt and like, because it makes sense, like why Anne is so, you know, despondent on like giving away Hunter to like Travis, because they basically raised Hunter as their
own, kind of his parents.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like Hunter calls them mom and dad, and honestly, they have no. I don't think that they definitely have no children of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly,
interesting, they don't ever really address that. Like, well, it's they obvious.
Do, well, not because they don't have children, but she says that line where she's like, I don't know. I felt it as kind of selfish in her part that she just wanted him to be there, because she says a line where she's like, if he leaves, like, we don't really, like, what's going to happen to us? Like, kind of, like, insinuating, like, is this all that's keeping us together? Yeah. Or, like, what's going to happen when he's not here anymore?
I meant in the way that they never address, they never explicitly say that they either couldn't have kids or didn't want kids before Hunter came into their life.
Yeah.
But it's kind of clear at this point it would be kind of too late for them to have kids.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can see, you know, it all goes to, like, the full dimensional characters of, like, Walt and Ann. Because, you know, you get where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically, like, throughout the last 4 years, they raised Hunter from, like, you know, pre-K, like, child to, like...
He was, what, 3 when they got him?
Mm-hmm. They got, like, yeah, 3, right?
And now he's almost 8.
Yeah, almost 8. Yeah. So...
The fact that they really emphasize the fact that he really has no memory. They're very faint memories before living with them, as like a big stake in that, because it would kind of hurt Hunter as much as it would hurt them in a way to uproot him. As there's no real sides to this movie, which is interesting, as much as you're like, well, it would make sense for him to stay. There's so many themes about, you know, where you come from, and your, you know, your birthplace, whether that be a place or a person, through bonds and stuff like that, that justifies the decisions that are made just as much as the ones that aren't.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's totally true.
It's like you're excited for their little road trip at the end when they do leave, but at the same time, it's like a bittersweet. Well, you're like, oh, man, what they're doing.
Hunter's not going back to the LA school, man. No. that's it for his school.
Hope his little weird friend and him, like, said goodbye properly.
He was like, good, like, next day, like, I mean, that day, he was like, goodbye.
Yeah, he's like, I'll see you later.
Screw that.
Yeah. I do love the one thing. I love the walkie-talkies. And I love the little line where he's like, just in case. And then, like, later at the bank when he actually sees her, he's like, I told you they weren't toys.
Right. I like during that whole, like, well, quote-unquote, car chase.
Yeah. The lamest car chase ever.
The slowest car chase of all time.
Since Knives Out.
Oh, my God, you're right about that. But, like... you know, like, they finally, like, the red car. And also, there's 2 red cars.
Yeah,
and
it felt like Baby Driver. Remember the opening of Baby Driver?
It did, right?
Yeah.
No, it did. And, like, they finally go to the 2 cars. They're going up to the exit. One taking the other exit, and the other is taking the other. And the kid was like, and then Travis was like, which car? Which car? And the kid was like, the right... No, the left. I'm like, you're so lucky, man.
Yeah.
You're so lucky.
Yeah, Travis is like, if we get this wrong, like, we gotta wait another month to find her again. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's like out of the picture to turn around and go back, like, they're not giving up.
Yeah,
they understand the decision that they've made just in going as far as Houston. That they'll.
And this is a small thing, but I've been noticing more and more frequently the way that film shows, like, the patches of time, and not just like cutting between things, but in that is also embedded in the story and, like, dialogue wise and one that really stuck out to me was specifically at that road trip where like, you know, the time frame of they have until the 5th, and I guess they leave probably between the 1st and the 2nd, and they have, like, a line about, like, They have the walkie-talkies, and they're talking from the back, and they're like, well, how long would it take to get to Houston with, like, light
speed?
Travel
the speed of light, yeah.
Yeah, right. And then...
3 seconds.
And then immediately they're there, and then they say, like, oh, it's the 5th. Like, it literally took them, like, 3 days, but, like, I don't know, just, like, little things like that
so
that
clever.
Weren't... Yeah, like, so clever with writing and, like, the timing, and, yeah, there were so many little things that.
That's true, and, yeah, those are the good moments, like, the walkies and, like, the kid... Mm-hmm. Hunter's, like, in the back of, like, the truck, and,
yeah,
Travis, like, just talking to his son.
It's, like, the cutest part of their relationship, really, to see, especially when
you see him grow.
Yeah.
It's, like,
to see, Travis across the street in the bank, that's the part where, you know, they're doing all the lingo and stuff, and he's got that little smile, like, I don't know, that's the part that really warms your heart.
Like, he finally has found, I mean, I don't want to say found someone. Ozzy is his own son. But, like, you know, after being desolate for, like, the last, like, 4 years, like, literally just being to your own.
Yeah.
The whole time.
And to sort of call back something that he talks about before the suit scene, he sort of finally figured out what a father looks like. Because he even asked that when he's talking to the maid. And he's like, what does a father look like? But he's talking about physically. Like, he's talking about what should he wear? Mm-hmm. Like, what would make him respect him more in a way? But, like, obviously, there's more to that. There's another meaning to that. And he sort of finally figured that out. He's it's a little different for everyone. but the fact that they finally figured out their relationship is really, really nice.
Makes it all more crushing at the end.
Mm. Yeah, I'd like to believe that they, I don't know, reunite or figure something out, work something out. Mm-hmm. That it doesn't just end with him stuck in the middle between Walt and Anne and his son and wife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hopefully Hunter didn't walk in the desert for 4 years.
Yeah.
I hope not. That would be such a bummer.
Yeah.
Oof, oof.
Paris, Texas 2.
Paris, Texas 2.
This time it's Hunter.
The Hunter edition.
The first line after 30 minutes is like, here we go again.
just a lawnmower.
Is it really?
Wait. Hey, why would there be a lawnmower?
Why would there be a lawnmower at 11:19? I'm like, is that a helicopter? What is that?
It does sound like a lawnmower.
Wait, there's salt. Oh, no, because it's snowing tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
They probably put salt in the sidewalk.
I don't know if this is audible on the podcast, but...
viewers, it's going to be snowing tomorrow on Saturday.
It is. Do not date the damn podcast, because it's not going out this week.
Cut.
It might be snowing when this goes out. You never know. But at any rate, that's a salt-spreading machine in the parking lot outside.
I don't know if this microphone's going to pick that up.
We are outing ourselves as not being in a soundproofed professional studio, as I'm sure.
Sorry, y'all.
But the sound of cats eating and people walking around occasionally, that's... probably pretty clear.
What do you know what camera or lens it was? I guess what camera is.
I didn't look that up actually this time. It's funny when it gets back to film, I don't really look it up because I'm like
the DSLR on a
is on Sony A7
and on a kit R, lens.
I don't even know.
I guess I'm more interested. I don't know. Okay, this is gonna make me probably sound really stupid.
It's 35 millimeter. That's all it says. Spherical cinematographic. It's not cinematic. It's like cinematographer, but cinematographic process. I sound like an idiot now.
Spherical.
Yeah.
Spherical.
Spherical process. Spherical. But yeah, it just says negative format 35 millimeter. Doesn't say what camera.
Okay.
But it's got that great like deep focus Western. Like it feels like Searchers, like a classic. Like everything is. Like the rich blues of the sky, the like really rich grain. There's like a texture. There's like a physical. You can feel like the sand, just like with the texture of it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, usually there's like so little info on movies that are shot on film before a certain year that I don't bother, unfortunately, looking it up. You can usually see what the stock it was.
It was definitely shot on a big camera. A big lens.
Yeah.
That's one thing that's so definite.
35, I mean, this movie could, I think, easily have been shot parts of it on something like 70 and look gorgeous. But that's not fitting to the whole film, just parts of it.
No, but I mean,
that would have been
with that desert landscape, though?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, with the desert, sure, but...
I guess we didn't really mention him a lot in this one, though, but Wim Wenders directed this movie. Wim Wenders,
popular in his own regard. Like he has a very vast career. I don't know that I've seen any of his other movies.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of his other movies, unfortunately.
A lot of documentaries, though.
His other famous movie was Wings of Desire. That's the other famous movie that he made. I think another movie made it onto the Criterion very recently called Until the End of the World.
Yeah, that's on his IMDb. That's third on his known for
ability. But he's still making movies.
Really? Is he really?
Yeah, no, he's, I mean, more documentaries.
That's right, he did, he did a documentary on the Pope. I've actually seen the poster for this. It's like HBO? No. Yeah, you're right. He is still very active.
Yeah, no, he's still making...
That's cool.
Yeah, he's still making movies today.
Man, I wish he would make another, like, big, like, popular drama.
I mean, he made Wings of Desire Like, there's like literally a franchise to Wings of the Desire that he directed. Yeah, why not Paris, Texas? Where's that?
I would love to see a director of a movie like this make like an A24 movie. And A24 is so much about like new voices and different voices, but even as old as his career is and he is, his voice just feels so unique and fresh that it would just aid like a new story from him would be so fantastic.
It feels, I mean, I can't speak to his other films, but this one in particular feels quiet but strong, I guess. Yeah. I would describe
strong
it like
spoken.
Yeah, like it's so well thought out and curated and even like I said it, thoughtful, like but it isn't like it's not yelling in your face about it, but it's so like I don't know, it just kind of lives at like the edges and I don't know, I love it.
Yeah.
Obviously we've been talking about it. I love it.
Yeah, that's true.
That's we've kind of reached the end of the notes that I have.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking through mine and we've said a lot.
There's a couple places where I'd be like, I'd write a note and I'd be like, why, like, let the movie say that. Why do you have to comment on that? Or like, there's nothing I can say that the movie didn't already say better. Like, it is so self-assurant. It's I think it speaks so much to the individual that watches it. This is another movie that kind of depending, I'm really glad I saw it when I did, and even, you know, even though I feel left out up until this point, because I honestly don't know that, like, at a point earlier in my life, if I would have been, like, emotionally mature enough to really give this, let this movie work the way that it did.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would have enjoyed it, but I don't think it would have had the impact of seeing it fresh, like, as the person I am now, compared to if I'd seen it, you know, in beginning of college or something like that.
Yeah.
So I'm really thankful to have had it been so effective for me watching it today.
Good. I'm glad you watched it. It really is such a masterwork.
Yeah. You have the Criterion, right?
I do have the Criterion.
What kind of features are?
Oh well, it's you know, like the interviews with Wim Wenders. There's a whole interview with Sam Shepard.
Ooh.
And there's actually it's pretty funny. There's like a whole like deleted footage.
Really?
Thing. Yeah.
Whoa.
And it actually has a lot. There's a lot.
Really?
Some of it, like, I could see it working, but some where it just plan out does not work.
Huh.
Like, for example, one of the plan out doesn't work things. You know, remember the, so John Lurie, the guy, he's like a famous blues musician, and he was in Paris, Texas for like a minute as the Peep Show owner. He was,
that's
the guy who turned away Travis in the beginning. So it was weird. So after the first interaction, so this delete scene, after the first interaction of Travis and, he literally comes into the room.
Whoa.
After Travis leaves the room, he comes in and he plays a harmonica for 3 minutes.
What?
It's really weird.
Whoa.
That sounds like a David Lynch movie.
it's literally, he blows on the harmonica, really scary. Like, he's like intense.
Oh my gosh.
And she's like all sad and shit, and then she like leaves the room, and he's still playing the harmonica.
What?
I think they did that just because John Lurie's a famous bluegrass musician himself.
Maybe they didn't.
He's been in Jim Jarmusch movies and all that stuff as well.
Yeah. So interesting, because Robbie Mueller is like Jim Jarmusch's like default cinematographer.
So I guess there was a connection there. But anyway, it was like that was like a weird moment, and there was also one in which I think Hunter like in. I don't know where. I don't think it was in Houston. I think it was outside the town of Houston. I think like Hunter like meets this like girl off like this school bus, and basically him like Hunter and the girl just like try to talk with each other, but like nothing like really works, and like she leaves, and you probably never see her again.
Huh.
And so that doesn't work at all. Hmm. But that harmonica thing, I can't get out. I can't get that out.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm so glad they cut that just hearing you talking about it, but I have to see it.
Yeah, because I feel like that doesn't go with the vibe of the rest of the movie.
No, definitely not at all. I don't know whose idea that was.
I cannot picture that. That's so funny.
And actually, there's another funny thing in which it was like during the scene where like when Jane and Hunter finally reunite in the hotel. And basically, I mean, they're doing the same take and all that stuff, you know, like, they're, like, rolling with it. And then they cut, and then the camera, like, pans to, like, the bed, and Wim Wenders, like, in the bed. I mean, not in a creepy way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just Wim Wenders, like, it's, like, under, like, Wim Wenders, I think the second AC is, like, in the bed. And they're, like, smiling. They're, like, we got the shot.
That's cool.
And, like, such a, if it's German, he has, like, this, like, glasses. I don't know, it's pretty funny.
Blooper in LA. Yeah.
It's kind of a blooper. It's kind of funny. But anyway, but there's some interesting moments. Like,
that's cool.
Like, there's actually one explanation. So, if you notice how, like, Travis never sleeps, like,
yeah,
in the movie.
Like,
there's, like, one
thing.
You never see him sleep at all. They actually kind of give a reason in the deleted scenes. He has, like, there's one point where he, like, lies down and sleeps. But then it was actually this beautiful shot, actually. It's a very beautiful shot of, like, Jane's face, like lying down, and light literally comes across her face.
Ooh.
And, like, she opens up her eyes. It's like some, like,
like, all he can see when he closes.
Oh, wait.
Yeah. And, like, yeah. That's, like, basically a dream. And then he, like, wakes up and, like, just, and then he wakes up and he just, like, walks.
That's crazy.
I'm like, huh, that makes a lot of sense.
Is that reference in their conversation? Does he say anything about constantly seeing her or something like that?
No.
She has the
really
great line where she's talking about after she got her job at that place, all the
all
voices
the
started to sound like his, mm-hmm. Which I thought was just so, like, heart-crushingly poetic and beautiful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, but you'll never really hear an explanation why he does
that.
Yeah, me too.
That sounds really good. Like,
yeah,
that sounds cool.
And it's a beautiful-ass shot, too.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the deleted scenes were definitely not in the best condition because, obviously, they're on the floor.
Print
But, God, even that looked beautiful.
That's cool.
I would have been so pissed if I was, like, Robbie Mueller.
Yeah.
And you got that shot, and you're like, what?
Like, what the fuck?
That's definitely killing a darling right there. Huh.
Yeah.
That's so weird. Oh, yeah, I can't imagine why.
I need to show you all
that. I got to watch that. Yeah, I want to pick up the... I'm a big Criterion boy. I want
to... Yeah, I can give it to you.
Pick that one up. To keep? No.
Not to keep. Nah.
No. But that's cool. I'll check that out.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend that. That's definitely a movie I want to revisit. A bunch of times. Mm-hmm. I feel like that this will be a cool movie to revisit, like, throughout my life, which is kind of scary, as exciting as it is.
Sure.
To see how, like, the impact of it changes as I lived more years.
I
can definitely speak to that a little bit, seeing it, I think, now.
Oh,
like,
because you've seen it before?
Shut up. No, just because I can think about, like, what I took away from it watching it that time, and then what I took away from it watching it a second time.
Mm.
And the state of mind that I was in then, where I was very much, not that I still am not very new to the film industry, but, like, very new to just, like, I guess I would call this, like, I don't want to say that, like, a film school type movie, where it was, like, not really necessarily popular culture, but it's something that like, film people look to as, like, a masterpiece, but it's not necessarily, like, a popular culture masterpiece.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
That's all I went into it, and so everything I was just like, oh, this looks beautiful, but I feel like I got the emotional weight of it this time, especially being a little bit older and, like, understanding the themes of it in my personal life even more than then.
Yeah.
So I would say, obviously, yes.
Very true.
Very good point.
Very good point.
And I hope that point can coexist with my emotional maturity point. Instead, that doesn't faze me.
You,
still happy I saw it today.
No, I'm glad that
kidding.
You did.
I'm kidding. That's great. This was a great pick. I'm so happy that we watched this.
Yeah.
As the billboard in the last shot said, together we make it happen. So I'm really glad. You're an excellent guest. Thank you for bringing this movie.
No, thank you all for having me. I'm glad you all watched the movie.
Yeah, we'll have to have you on again for another pick. You gave me a couple other options as well as this one. So
good.
Maybe we'll have to do it. Unless you have something else.
Something.
Unless you have something else that comes to mind even more, we'll have to have you back on in the future.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Do you have any, like, social media or projects or things you want to plug?
Well, I'm in development of a Film 3.
Hell yes.
Up that. So Film 3. We'll see what happens there.
Is Hit and Run going to be available? It's still in festival?
It's still in festival run.
Look for it online eventually.
Yeah, you know, I just created a trailer
for
Hit and Run. So hopefully it's on my YouTube channel, just my Alex Depp.
Sweet.
You know.
Is that, like, isn't your Instagram? Or I don't know. Unless you don't want to put your Instagram.
It's for the private Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Alex Dab YouTube channel with two P's, just, right? You
know, yeah, yeah, we have two P's. Okay. Yes. Nope, not one P. Not one P. No. Two P's.
We got to bring him back to the beginning. It's a P movie.
P movie.
Yeah, yeah, the
P
movie. Yeah, of course. Yeah, but nope, I have like Hidden Run up there, and actually I have a few experimentals if you want to see it. I don't think y'all want to see it. I don't know.
Oh, no, don't discredit yourself.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Well, I don't know. Well, it's up there. So, but anyway, a Hidden Run trailer. Check I just got out.
Yeah.
Check it out.
It's a great film. And totally, like, I totally see, like, your inspiration.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
In, like, this movie. And I remember being, because I was in film, too, with you. You mentioned.
Man, we're all in the same
class. You were in film.
Yeah.
we're all in the same
film. We were in the same group.
You sat in the back corner, so.
That's true.
Yeah.
But, like, talking about, like, No Country for Old Men and stuff, like, I totally see, like, you definitely got a style and a voice, and I'm excited to see what you
I forgot. Did I mention Paris, Texas, my pitch? I guess I didn't. I don't think I did.
I don't remember.
I don't think you had. I didn't.
I could have not remembered because I hadn't seen it, but I definitely remember the No Country for Old Men stuff more.
That is true.
Oh, it explains why you talk so much about deacons. With it all makes sense. It all comes full circle. Awesome.
Well, as always, you can follow us on social media at Only Foreign Films on Twitter and Instagram. And if you'd like, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Or be wherever nice. You can leave.
Be nice, y'all.
Yeah.
Think you can leave reviews on Spotify?
I don't believe so, not yet.
But if you find a place, you can.
Yeah.
Please. You find a place.
Yeah.
Just be talking
please
about
talk
us.
About it.
Yeah.
Talk over dinner, breakfast,
over dinner,
lunch.
You can just meet somebody at the bus stop. Hey,
hey,
hear about the podcast?
You.
Hey, listen to this.
Get off. Get off of here.
Get off.
Maybe reference the podcast before you say that.
Yeah. But like, if they're true fans, they would know if you just said, get off.
Yeah.
Maybe they somebody will be like, hey, I listen to that podcast
y'all have merch
too.
Yet? Yeah, y'all got to get some merchandise.
If someone wants to pay for us to have merch, maybe. Sure.
Advertisements?
We need a Patreon now.
We do. We need a Patreon. We need, I don't know, some kind of...
What is
sponsor.
It?
I was trying to think. What I guess Audible does a lot of.
Yeah.
Audible.
We need some sponsorships.
Squarespace.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. We'll do ad breaks.
ZipRecruiter.
I'm trying to think of all the podcast ads. Yeah, yeah. Any of them? Like not to knock those podcast ads. Like they annoy me, but I'd be willing to do
those,
one.
Yeah.
I would do
those
one.
Irritate me. But in off.
If it meant I got paid though, like I'd sit through it. Come on. We'll make it entertaining. I promise. And sell lots of whatever it is that you want us to sell. No, I'm kidding. Remember in the Paris, Texas episode where they sell? I remember.
You guys said this.
Yikes.
No. Oopsies. But on that note.
Yeah, on that note. Once again, you
can get off.